When we're looking at changing with ERP, we're changing a whole range of business processes. But my key message today is that people are not processes.
This is the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel and Associates, a Newport Beach, California-based ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. The ERP OCJ seeks to share expertise, insight, experience, and research, and to create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success. And now, here's your ERP expert and host, the founder of Nessel & Associates, Dr. Jack Nessel.
Jack here. Thanks, listeners, for tuning in again for another insightful deep dive. And if you're new to the show, we are glad you are joining us. Thank you. During an ERP organizational change effort, the value and management of stakeholder dynamics and team diversity is critical. I'm a firm believer that we need to put a ton of focus on people if ERP projects have a chance of ending in success. With the show today, ERP Organizational Change, Stakeholder Dynamics, with Samantha Jung Fielding, we intend to, in Samantha's own words, share some behavioral sunshine in the world of ERP and digital transformation. Samantha is a behavioral alignment and team culture strategist, best-selling author, and award-winning speaker. Samantha is also the founder of Happinescence, where they specialize in inner patterns, team dynamics, and culture refinement for small businesses, high-performance teams, and motivated individuals. Needless to say, she is deeply qualified to bring some insight on the subject to leadership, project managers, and all stakeholders. Joining us from Bombay, Auckland, New Zealand, Samantha, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jack. Delighted to be here.
Likewise, it's a pleasure. I'm looking forward to this. Thanks for your time, and I can't wait to share some of your insight with our listeners. I know you have extraordinary insight here that I'm looking forward to sharing with our listeners. So, Samantha, please tell us more. Further introduce yourself to our listeners, if you would, please.
So we live currently in Bombay in New Zealand, but I'm originally from England. And when we moved to New Zealand 10 years ago, we were able to buy ourselves a small alpaca farm. So as well as practicing now for nearly 17 years in the field of behavioral psychology, I'm also an alpaca farmer in my spare time.
So it probably keeps you pretty busy, I would imagine.
It gives me something no matter the weather. I can be outside in the sun or the rain. And alpacas are amazingly sensitive creatures. So I believe it adds a lot to the work that I do in behavioral psychology.
Sure. That's interesting. Well, thank you for that, Sam. So the first question, you state on your website that, quote, every group, organization, business, and team develops member dynamics, management challenges invariably focus on the interactions between people. Yet the definition of leadership means issues center on leaders' energy, style, or approach. In essence, for a microcosm to progress further, the microcosm or leader must first evolve higher, end quote. So Sam, how would you define effective leadership and how does an organization do this? How do they evolve higher? I know that's a big question and I apologize. What would that general framework look like?
I think that leadership really breaks down into three areas. I think that it's about the awareness that you're raising in other people, but it's also the experience that you're facilitating for others and the meaning that you're delivering to them so that they can unite their own purpose and passions into the mission that you're all working on together. So for me, leadership is always about going first, but we go in very different ways. So when I talk about the fact that it's about the microcosm or the leader first evolving themselves, I think that for everybody, we're all on a path of personal development. And that path is going to define how far the entities with which we work are able to evolve themselves. So in short, when it comes to a framework, I believe that we're all endeavoring to balance ourselves personally, learn how to effectively adapt ourselves to the circumstances which come our way, but also intensify our awareness of what's happening in and around us. And when we're able to do those things, then we are personally developing as leaders. And that gives the organization or the entity with which we're working the opportunity to do the same.
Great insight. I love the response. So, Sam, is leadership a skill or a trait?
It's a little bit of both, Jack. I think you have to look at the fact that any skill is actually task-based. So, of course, you can start off by not having a skill and gain it, acquire it, or develop it further if it's something that you have, but is something that needs some work. But of course, a trait is character-based. And if you, like me, understand that we all have growth mindsets, as pushed by Carol Dweck in her psychological research, then we all know that any character-based opportunity is also there for growth and development. So I believe leadership is on both sides of that fence. We're straddling, and we've got an opportunity with both feet to move forward.
So, Sam, is it possible that successful leaders go through a confidence crisis or maybe even a arrogance crisis that would prohibit or derail leadership's ability to grow in that growth mindset?
Most definitely. In fact, it's not just possible for most leaders. It actually does happen at some point. If we think about ourselves, almost the idea of us being a skittle, curveballs coming in knock us individually off balance. And once our balance goes, it becomes really difficult to actually maintain a position where we stand tall, but are able to flex and move, because balance is, of course, what keeps us in place. Now, if we've gone already from our balance and our flexibility, then our awareness is simply about getting back on our feet. So is it possible? Not only is it possible, but for most people, it actually happens. And for many, occurs not repeatedly, but certainly at different stages in their development as leaders.
Very interesting. So to follow up on that, Sam, on your site, you discuss that, quote, which changes are you facing? Every behavior can be modified. We have a solution for you, end quote. So when we talk about your response to the first three questions and whether or not leadership is a skill or a trait, there's a lot to be said about behavior and modifying behavior to become that better leader, right? To become more aware of, you know, how you can not only overcome a confidence crisis or maybe an arrogance crisis, how do you reflect and look for ways to become a better leader and never assume that you can't become a better leader, right?
Agreed.
And improve the skills and probably improve the traits as well. But you share some behavior influences on your website. So for instance, mindset, emotion, habit, energy, leadership, management, communication, relationship. So I'd like to examine these particular influences a little bit further. And we do know that for all stakeholders, even leaders, that in large-scale ERP organizational change, they can be very stressful, right? Which means that as an organization and as individuals, there needs to be some sort of coping mechanisms and deliberate ways in which to minimize stress. And these need to be tactical in terms of deploying and considering how to address people's ability to cope. And I think that sometimes, especially in large organizational change efforts, that's underestimated and perhaps undervalued. But you share that, quote, every person operates at four levels, physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual, and that individual coping mechanisms go off track for many reasons. When people unite together inside an organization, businesses, or teams, this creates a group dynamic which amplifies synergy and highlights disconnection. Mindset, emotions, and behaviors may clash, synchronize, or even loop together. The result can be counterproductive operating principles, irreconcilable communication issues, and a toxic culture challenges which are deeply frustrating to everyone, end quote. Can you share, Sam, in terms of human behavior and cultural paradigms in this context and in terms of mitigating stress? Can you add more to that?
Absolutely. So one of the things that I talk about all the time is that all behavior comes from our thinking patterns and our emotional balance or imbalance. Everything is driven by what's going on inside of us, all of which is invisible. And I like to explain when I'm talking about groups by talking about first an individual. If we were to say that an individual is perhaps like a glove puppet, if you think about what's going on inside them, it's like the hand that's inside the glove. So every individual has got something internally that's driving them. It drives the way they think and it drives the way that they feel. But as soon as you put an individual into any environment, they're not only a glove puppet, but they also become like a marionette where there are other strings that are going to be pulling them in different directions. So we've got what's happening inside and we've got what's happening outside in the environment. Now, that is not just about what's going on for one of us. It's going on for all of us. And of course, those strings can very easily get crossed. So as soon as we put people together, we have our own individual prompts internally that are going to push us in a certain direction. We have the environmental strings that are going to pull us in a different direction. And we have the fact that people can clash or they can actually enjoy one another, because it seems almost invisible, but there are elements that bring us together or push us apart that are nothing to do with either those strings or the internal hand inside the glove. Mm-hmm. Now, what happens in a stressful situation is that for each of us individually, our perspectives begin to narrow. So we start to look at what's going on for us as individuals rather than what's going on across the full team. We get a very strong self-focus, and it can even become as strong as paranoia, where we start judging ourselves and potentially blaming not necessarily just ourselves but others around us for where we're at mentally and emotionally. We also can then become quite unresourceful in our thinking because we're wanting to feel safe and secure, and stress is exactly the opposite of that. Stress is pushing us to grow and to develop and to move out of ourselves. So we get this internal dissonance where how we feel and how we think isn't responding as well as it could to what's going on in the environment around us. And it makes it really difficult to stay on balance and to remain flexible. Because, of course, if we think about balance, balance is all about continuing to feel secure and safe and surround ourselves with what's familiar. But flexibility is what stretches us out of those comfortable zones in order that we can grow and develop. So stress can be a really positive thing, but for many people, if there's too much, it then becomes experienced as something negative. Now, the difficulty we have with that is that when we're in a positive environment, we're amplifying ourselves, our thoughts, our emotions, and our behaviours. They're working to grow us, stretch us, and move us along. But as soon as we feel in a negative environment, then it's almost like that hidden below stuff that nobody else can see starts to enmesh us. It tangles itself around inside us like roots, and then we start to trip ourselves up and potentially those around us. The real difficulty we have is all of this is going on without anyone else seeing it, because it's all to do with our personal associations, which are driven by the context in which we find ourselves. So if we start to look at some of the other people that I quote a lot when I'm working, if we start, for example, looking at Daniel Kahneman's work, Thinking Fast and Slow, we all need the ability to be able to think in both ways. But what we don't necessarily understand is that our own thinking is intuitive in most circumstances, driven by those personal associations. And our associations are all in individual. So we can trip ourselves up quite easily because we intuitively jump to conclusions that are actually incorrect. And for others around us who are doing the same thing, that's how in an environment where there are many people, it can become very, very difficult. And our behaviours are clashing because our minds are along different lines and our emotions are starting to touch one another in a sensitive manner, but not necessarily to align with each other. So we end up with all of those crossed strings I was talking about earlier, and we end up personally feeling that we can do no more to move things forward. We're looping rather than synchronizing. Does that make sense?
Sam, that's a wonderful and a very powerful answer, I think. And this idea that you'd mentioned, and I'm going to kind of loop back your answer to this question to the first question or two, effective leadership needs to be very cognizant of what you just described, right? This idea that every person operates at four levels, you know, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual. But effective leadership needs to be able to address that which is invisible, abstract, and sometimes very hard to see.
Correct. And that's what makes it so difficult.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes that's the root of the problem. It's not the obvious or what you see. And I think as a leader, to develop and grow and even, you know, to develop your skills, it takes reflection and understanding and really comprehending and listening to what you just said. I really think that was a wonderful answer. You know, leaders need to understand these strings, and they need to understand that perspectives can narrow during times of coping, and that, you know, people, there's a strong self-focus, and leaders need to, if you understand that, I think you can create and help promote and advocate for this idea that you mentioned of flexibility, right?
I would agree with you. And that's also why I say that for me, leadership is not only about the awareness that you raise in yourself and in others, but it's also about the experience that you're facilitating for them. Yeah. Because if you are creating a space where the strings are crossing, then it's actually creating a more negative experience. But if you add to that a meaning that gives people an understanding as to why their strings must cross, because we know that we're going to aim to develop something greater than our crossed strings, then it becomes a more positive experience. So the leader is constantly developing, if you like, almost magically creating an understanding around what's going on, what's hidden beneath. And it's a real skill that leaders do need to develop. And it's not necessarily a character trait, as we said, but it is a skill that you can actually learn to do, because it comes from being aware that most of what's going on is happening in a hidden fashion.
Yeah, fantastic. So to stick to that theme a little bit, Sam, and I just want to talk about people management a little bit more. But when it comes to people management, you share that, and again, I want to share another quote, that how does a standard interaction create harmony between some people, yet conflict for others? Implementing strategy, managing resources, and coordinating human effort for employees or volunteers generates snags. Some disconnects improve with the process, others resolve via policy or procedure, but for people dynamics, there is no quick fix, end quote. Well, how do you fix it then?
Excellent question. So as I said, sometimes a process does come into play, or it may be a policy, but the quick fix is to change the mix. Now that actually could be bringing people in or extracting people out. But we don't always have that facility. In any change management environment, we want to take our people along with us. So when we're changing the mix, there are other ways that we can do it. We can change the perspectives of the people that we're working with. We can change the experiences that we're offering to them. And we can change the direction or the meaning of what it is that we're creating. So it's very much about putting ourselves in other people's shoes in order to understand what is going to help them to feel that the mix is changing.
So I think what you're suggesting is by doing that, when you the fix is really in changing the mix, you're really changing the dynamics of these four levels that everybody operates under, right? The physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual.
And absolutely.
And you're also changing the experience associated with each of those, right? So I think when you say there is no quick fix, but by changing those dynamics between individuals, that would help manage conflict.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You summarized it beautifully. So often when I'm called in to work with an organization, the people are the people that we want to be able to move forward, but we've reached a stalemate. Something has gone wrong. Either we've found it very difficult to implement a new process, but more likely the behaviors that are required behind the processes, the people themselves are finding it difficult to adapt and implement something new, do things in new ways. People find change often a negative rather than a positive. So I'm brought in simply to give a new perspective, to create a new experience. And as you say, that is done from all of the four areas that we've spoken about: how people think, the patterns that they're using, how people emote, how they feel. Everybody wants to keep emotion out of the workplace, but actually emotion is the biggest elephant in the room. And therefore, when we start to look at how we're doing behavior, which is the doing side of things, we need to think about the thinking and the feeling side of things, because that's what prompts all behavior.
So essentially then, if it's based on experience and this idea of these four levels and the experience that these four levels bring at an individual level, that really, if it gets to the point in terms of, so back to my original question, you know, that had to do with people management, how do you address, how do you fix these issues then that, and sometimes can be pretty significant in terms of conflict, right? Either between individuals or groups. And what you're saying is you change the experience. And so that is, let's see if I can articulate this thought. You're saying then it gets to a point when you have a certain group of people or a couple of people even, and there's this conflict that as a manager, you can coach, you can attempt to develop, you can maybe even have difficult and or constructive conversations. But unless you change that experience or this dynamics of these four levels within that group, you may be spinning your wheels.
Absolutely right. Okay. One of the things that we have as humans is the necessity to experience ourselves as individuals, but also the requirement to experience ourselves vis-a-vis others. Mm-hmm. Now, that might be a duality, as you and I, one-on-one, but it's also in an interdependent environment, which is one-to-many. And the only way that we can do that is to have the experience. So when we take somebody who's in an interdependent environment, working in a one-to-many crowd or team, and we work with them in a one-on-one way, so duality, we're not actually giving them the experience of interdependency. We're giving them the experience of duality. So we're changing what happens inside of the way that they're functioning. And therefore, when they go back into the interdependent or one-to-many environment, they may not necessarily have gained the skills that we were hoping to give them when we did one-on-one coaching. So sometimes it's about actually adding something extra into the team environment, as in somebody who's going to come and work with the full team, rather than singling out the individual and working with them to increase their skills or change their characteristics. The difficulty we have is that any group forms its dynamic. And when we're attempting to change the group dynamic, we cannot just work with one or two individuals.
So, Sam, to continue along these lines, you state on your website that poor management decisions, project failure, dwindling team spirit, tardy communications and deadline dodging are strong indicators of resource struggles. And you then list some influences such as what you call the, and I'll put the links to these articles in our show notes for our listeners, and I highly recommend that they take a look at your site. But you list some influences such as one bad apple, power struggle, productivity hitches, interpersonal conflict, delegation loopholes, and collaborative breakdown. And these are all obviously very real issues in the context of organizational performance and organizational change. And what do you do, though? Can you speak more to addressing that one bad apple? You know, so based on leveraging kind of your response to the previous question and how you change and how you can fix these different dynamics in terms of conflicts between people or groups, how do you address that one bad apple? I mean, is there a point that you come to in which, you know, you try to change the dynamics, you applied, you know, Samantha's fix, and there's still a very negative vibe there? How do you address that? How do you make sure that doesn't become a concern? And I just want to add, Samantha, I believe that as managers and leaders, that a lot of times if you have one bad apple, it's our job to really understand that, you know, what's causing that, what's creating maybe the concerns or the lack of motivation. You know, is it an organizational influence? Is it a motivational influence? Do they need some training? Do they need some support? Is it really a leadership issue that you're creating this one bad apple? But what do you have to say about that?
Everything that you've just said, I completely agree with, Jack. But again, it's one of the reasons that I get called into organizations, because it's really easy to point the finger and blame one individual. And of course, we talk about the idea that one bad apple rots the entire barrel. Mm-hmm. And as you've stated, the query is it actually that individual, or is it the dynamic that has been set up in the team, which may be emanating from that individual, but is perpetuated by others in the mix? Is it the leader who hasn't come down in a strong enough fashion and given clear direction? So when I'm brought in to work with the one bad apple, the questions I'm always asking are first of the leader to understand exactly how the bad apple is showing up. How is the difficulty manifesting? What is the actual difficulty that's manifesting? And how are others responding to it? Because if we really need to identify what is going wrong before we can treat it and then reinsert our bad apple back into the rest of the dynamic. Because often it isn't one individual. I've worked with so many bad apples who, once they have been listened to, understood, and given personal help, have actually gone back into the organization and made a key difference. Now, that doesn't mean to say it's always the case. When we're looking at changing with ERP, we're changing a whole range of business processes. But my key message today is that people are not processes. Mm. And leaders are not necessarily people. And therein can lie the difficulty. So with all work in behavioral psychology, it's actually about how people are interacting. And I think it's critical that individuals are given the opportunity to actually show their worth, because there's worth in every single one of us, but we're not necessarily in an environment that makes that worth worthwhile. So each of us needs to be given that chance. Now, there are some companies I've worked with where the one bad apple has actually been developed to exit. And that can be a strategy as well, but that they exit with their self-worth, able to make their contribution elsewhere in a much better fashion. So it's simply about understanding how each person can add their contribution in a way that is going to elevate the whole.
That's fantastic. What insightful responses here, Sam. Thank you so much. So I want to ask a question regarding communication specifically. Most people, as you shared on this conversation, Sam, speak and listen from their own subjective frame of reference, which is created by their past experience and present understanding, which is a quote I took from your website. But what do you say about communication as a tool for aligning stakeholder dynamics and for kind of addressing these subjective frames that you refer to. Any advice in terms of how communication specifically can help bridge that gap and those misalignments?
Absolutely. I think all communication is actually a way that we put our emotion on show.
Yeah.
And as I say, emotion is not a popular word when I come into businesses. People don't really want to hear about emotion, but everything that we are doing when we're communicating is we're actually taking what's inside of us and we're putting it out for others to either respond to or respond against. So when we're coming into anything new, it's about being able to put ourselves in others' shoes. For me, communication is always about that. It starts with, it's all about me, obviously, but the way that we really want to be communicating is to be listening to others, actively listening to what is being said. And as I say, when it comes to communication, it's about putting emotion out on show. So what actually is being said, it's not necessarily the words, but sometimes it's the feelings that are coming through. There's a thought behind the words that maybe requires a little bit of interpretation. We've had some good fun today with you feeding back to me some of the things that I'm expressing, but an idea isn't necessarily encapsulated by the speaker in a way that the listener can grasp it. So sometimes it's about checking if understanding is actually going backwards and forwards. It can happen that when you throw out your conversational opportunity, that the person who responds grasps a different end of the stick to the one that you threw. And that in itself can be inspiring, and it can be creative, and it can be mammoth and spectacular, or it can be the complete opposite, and it can fire up difficulties and distraction and become almost a battleground. So communication is so, so difficult to get right, because again, as we said, we're expressing ourselves as individuals, and the only way that we can do that is to communicate with others. But that doesn't mean to say that we get it right all of the time.
So I like, as you'd mentioned, sometimes emotions aren't well received in the workplace. But I think that obviously humans are emotional beings that respond to empathy because it's inherent in our DNA. And empathy is also a key influence to effective leaders. So I think it has a huge role to play.
It totally does. Absolutely right.
You know, and obviously it has to be managed, but the idea, emotions aren't negative. I'll say that, at least I don't believe so. So Sam, what do you do first? You know, we talked about addressing disconnects between different group dynamics or maybe different individuals in this understanding that people have personal patterns in terms of their mindset, their emotion, their behavior, their communication. But do you focus on effective communication first, or do you jump right into changing this, as you described, experiences first? So if I'm having an issue and there's some misunderstanding or misalignment between stakeholder groups, do I coach and then I take the next step? And that would include communication and trying to improve the communication channels? Or would you go back to your response to, I think it was our third question or so, where you have to mix up the experiences within that group in order to address and align? Does my question make sense?
It does. And unfortunately, I am going to say that the answer to it does depend. It depends on where you're at in the process. If you're right at the beginning of something new, then the opportunity is to incite, to connect and to engage. But if you are partway through something and there's no engagement going on, at that point, I would say it's slowing down and it's listening and understanding and trying to figure out where the disconnect has actually happened. Because of course, it's difficult to fix what you don't understand. And one of the challenges I'm brought into organizations for is because we've tried to launch into correcting, but we don't actually grasp fully what correction is required. And this is something that we can do for lack of time. It can be because we're under pressure ourselves. But really, I believe that when there is an issue, the first thing we need to do is to evaluate where we actually are. And that comes down to proactively listening, proactively exploring, and getting the different perspectives and feedback that are going to give us a reality check on where things actually are in the process.
So Sam, you know, as you know, in most organizations, there's many different stakeholder groups. And for instance, in private equity, you have typically, you know, your investors, you have your private equity firm, you have your upper management, you have your labor force, you know, all these different stakeholder groups. Do you have any general, let's call it relationship advice on how, as an individual and interacting with different stakeholder groups, any advice in terms of promoting healthy relationships?
Always go for win-win-win. But we start in everything that we do, we begin with me. It's all about me. So in any relationship environment, and I'm working sometimes with people who are dealing with family situations, I'm working with people who've got working difficulties, I'm working with teams where it's come down to the dynamics. And as you say, your team isn't necessarily just those who are in the room, there are other stakeholders too. So for me, it's always about understanding what it is that the stakeholder is attempting to achieve. What is it they want? When you get what others want, you've got half a chance of being able to provide it. So for me, understanding others' wants is the first step in all communication. Where is it in this relationship that we're not covering someone's wants? And once we've got that, then we can start to go back and assess what could be done differently. We don't necessarily need to change everything, but what is it in the mix that we need to add in that's not currently there?
Fascinating. You had an article too, Sam, that I thought was quite interesting, and I'm going to share some of that. And again, we'll put these references in our show notes. But you talked about this idea in terms of relationships and building relationships within a workplace or personally, that there's this idea of mirror neurons are a big plus for mankind. You know, you just discussed some positive bonding habits. You know, you went on to explain a little bit about these different habits that are maybe even somewhat, again, built into our human DNA. But you mentioned that, you know, brain cells fire when you recognize your own actions in someone else, allowing you to match or mirror each other's emotions. You begin unconsciously flowing emotion to each other to show you're on the same side. You talked about how poor relationships undermine promise. You know, tend your own garden, which is the mindset, emotion, and energy before complaining about your neighbor's weeds. I just wanted to share that with our listeners. I thought that was a fun and interesting article.
It always comes back to me, doesn't it? And
yeah.
I remind my husband all the time when we're in any discussion. Yeah. We joke about the fact that people in glass houses should not throw stones.
Yeah, right.
So it's right. None of us are expert at this. Yeah. I've spent 17 years in the field of behavioral psychology, and I still get things wrong. Because it's complicated. We're actually, you know, we're not just running machines here. It's not you can push a button and the anticipated result is going to be processed by any human. We're all a work in progress, each and every single one of us. And we bring our personal work in progress into an environment with others when we go to work. We have all our businesses are working in progress as well. And in every other environment that we tread into, everything is a work in progress. It's all dynamically changing. So it makes for great complexity. And on one day, things could be ticking along perfectly. And on the other, they're absolutely not. As we all know, if we have teenagers in the house, everything can go upside down. So positive bonding habits are definitely a good thing to master. And they start every time with understanding that it's always about me. So when I'm talking to someone else, what's in that in the conversation for them? When I'm speaking to any of my children, it's definitely all about me, but I want to get my needs met by understanding how it's going to benefit them too. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly that same scenario even in the workplace, in every stakeholder conversation. How do we do it? We do it in a way by balancing ourselves and being flexible enough in our approach to take into account that it's actually all about the other person. They will see it as being all about me too.
Yeah. Wow, great. And certainly something for leaders to reflect on, right? Talk about developing a skill and understanding. I mean, that's a very fundamental truth about being human and human interactions. And the more that leaders bring that to the workplace, I think the better.
Definitely. We need more humanity, humanity in our leaders.
Absolutely. Sam, this is a fun conversation. I think we could go on for hours, and we really appreciate, you know, hitting some of these points with our listeners. And I'm sure that they'll find this to be quite interesting. But our last question for you for this conversation is, as practitioners, and especially I feel what we do in ERP organizational change, we absolutely benefit from learning from our colleagues such as yourself and our friends, whether, you know, that boots on the ground practitioner or researchers or academics. But how would you summarize this conversation for us? If you had to distill this down, and I have asked this question, I think, to every guest since episode one, because at the end of the day, this podcast is all about sharing and learning and collaborative learning. But how would you distill your work? What would you say to our listeners, and especially organizational change practitioners? What advice would you share?
I think I've said it already, and I'm going to repeat it just to be certain. People are not processes. Everything that happens in individuals lies beneath. It's hidden, and so it's difficult to understand. But we all believe that we're interpreting correctly. Nobody's acting out of the desire to actually go against somebody else's wants. We all feel that we're working forwards positively, but it's very and very challenging to get what goes on for someone else, because people are not processes. And most people have a difficulty if they are not people. So get help from somebody who understands people if that's your challenge. People development is an ongoing and never-ending process. So whenever anybody calls on me, they want the answer to one question: how do I fix this? And if there was a single answer, I would have made a million by now, because I would have bottled it and sold it off a shelf.
Yes.
There is no single answer. Yeah. It's complicated. People are complicated. Mm. So it's always about understanding that everything is ongoing. And the best way for us to do that is to develop ourselves, our own understanding of how we can be more aware, how we can maintain better balance in ourselves, and how we can open ourselves to greater flexibility.
Fantastic advice, Sam. That's wonderful. And people are not processes. Isn't that so true? Yeah. Sam, thank you so much for your time today. We really do appreciate it. We appreciate your dedication to your trade and to your work. For our listeners, can you share where they can find you? And I know it's www.happyessence.co.ng, right? Is your website?
Yeah, Happinessence. And so the word is spelled happiness and then E-N-C-E, and it's .co.nz, because we're over in New Zealand at the moment. So yeah, that's a great place to find me. I'm also on social media, so Samantha Young Fielding, and you'll find me in the usual places: LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. So happy to connect with people in all of those opportunities.
Wonderful. And so the best way for our listeners to get a hold of you is to use any one of those platforms?
Yes, definitely. I also have my own very tiny podcast. We only speak for 12 minutes a week, but that's Behavioral Alignment. And so they're welcome to tune in on Apple or on Spotify for that too.
We will absolutely share your contact info and your social media info, and certainly your podcast. And we highly recommend that people check out your podcast for sure. Sam, thank you again. We really appreciate it. Be well, and we will certainly talk soon.
Thank you, Jack. It's been so much fun.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of the ERP OCJ podcast. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change successes and challenges. We discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change by drawing on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience. We are incredibly grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us in our podcast as we seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community and contribute to its success by bringing research and practice closer together. We want to make sure this is the most useful and insightful ERP podcast you listen to, and we'd love your help in doing so by leaving us feedback and a review. A great place to do so is at Apple Podcasts. Just click on the Listen in Apple Podcasts link, then click Ratings and Reviews, and let us know your thoughts. You can get more info about the show, including show notes and episode highlights for this and all of our episodes, by visiting NesselandAssociates.com and clicking the podcast option. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. And don't forget to follow us on social media, hashtag the ERPOCJ. Thanks again for listening. Have a fantastic week.